everybody.
I am so glad to be here. And every single week when I hear my lovely intro music, it always puts such a real smile on my face. So happy holidays, everybody. We are now in the midst. We've just finished Thanksgiving and Hanukkah began last night. And of course, Christmas. Who can possibly believe that Christmas, the 25th of December, is almost here? I don't know about you. I'm not yet ready for winter. Anyways, everybody, I am BD Cohn-Vrenos, and welcome again to the Ask BD Show. For those of you who've been listening to the show for all of these years, and for new listeners, I am a psychotherapist and a sex therapist, and I am the author of the groundbreaking book, a book that I am so proud of. I wrote it for my daughter, Jordana, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And this book teaches us all, and I certainly wish that I had this book when I was beginning my own relationship life. It teaches us exactly how to assess who is right for you and who is wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. It actually educates, it informs, and above all, it really keeps us safe. I am also a columnist, and I am the new advice columnist for Dan's newspaper in the Hamptons. So twice a month, I am writing a variety of different Ask BD columns. People are starting to write in with their questions and their problems. And of course, as you all know, my mantra, and I want this to be your mantra, is to always be willing, even if it's difficult at times, to acknowledge and address and resolve as best as we can, even though we can't change our history, all of the issues that are getting in the way of our life and our relationships, and putting them in the drawer, or putting them under a carpet, that is not going to help us be able to live in the moment. And what I have found, and I've been practicing now, and every week when I say it, it's like, oh my God, I can hardly believe this, but I have been a practicing psychotherapist for over 35 years. And what I have learned over this period of time is that the very, very best thing that we can do for ourselves when the depression and the anxiety and the substance abuse issues and early child sexual abuse issues and problems stemming from our early family of origins, when these are the kinds of problems that continue to impact us today, you have to be willing to do what is in your best interest, and doing what is really in your best interest is being willing with, or sometimes, you know, without help, to acknowledge and address and resolve. And what I have found is that there are wonderful ways for people to learn how to emotionally work through, not just talk about it, but emotionally work through what did and did not happen in our lives. And it's not about forgetting. And oftentimes it is really not about forgiving, but through this process, you're able to get to a place in your life where you're actually able, and maybe for the first time in your life, being able to really live in the moment without having one foot of the past and one foot in the present. So if you are someone who has a lot of unfinished business, or what I call skeletons in your closet, do yourself a favor. You do not need to live with debilitating depression and anxiety. And I've seen people for so many years who've had substance abuse issues of various different kinds and sexual problems and have lived through horrendous, horrendous trauma in their lives. And yet these people, they are really the people who I have so much admiration for. They are my heroes. In fact, my patients really are my heroes who've had the courage, because it is not easy dealing with all of these issues, to declare that it is really time to finally and once and for all try to put some of these skeletons in the closet, try to actually put them away as best as we can. But even more importantly, being willing to look at them and deal with them as best as you possibly can. And it's really amazing how the quality of your life and the quality of your relationships can really, really change for the better. And I know that many of you who are listening right now, you're wondering, is this just a lot of psychobabble? Well, I can tell you, I've treated thousands of people, you know, over the years with problems, you know, just like yours, the depression, the anxiety, the suicidal thoughts, people who have bipolar disorder and who may need, you know, to be on medication, some people for the rest of their lives. But, you know, we need to do what we need to do. What is actually in our best interest. And what I find too, is that many people, and I want you to ask yourself this question, you know, we stand in our own ways. And one of the homework assignments, in fact, it is the same homework assignment that I give every single patient after every single session, regardless of what their so-called presenting problem happens to be. We all need you and me and all of us, we all need to be very, very mindful as we navigate our days, and we navigate our nights, and we navigate our relationships, that we are behaving in ways that are really and truly in our best interest. So I want you to ask yourself the question, and sometimes multiple times a day, is this good for me? Is this drink good for me? Is this extra piece of cake and sugar? Is this something that is good for me? Or on the other hand, am I doing things? Am I living my life in ways that are self-destructive, destructive, and self-sabotaging? And it's really amazing, you know, if we're mindful of all of this, it is absolutely possible. It is possible to make that change and to make that pivot. But I think that the first step is really to be aware of how am I living my life? And it's very, very easy to blame others for our problems. I mean, naturally, as children, we don't choose our parents and we don't choose our early family, you know, life and our early family life background. But as adults, I think that we all have a personal responsibility to really be aware and to have clarity, or to actually learn to have clarity, whether or not we are being good to ourselves. And of course, Gary Nell talks about this every single day in terms of nutrition. And, you know, just as a reminder, the importance of plant-based diets and having sufficient fruits and vegetables and grains and fish, and saying no to the alcohol and the nicotine and the drugs. And I'm one of these people. I don't care whether or not marijuana is legal. I mean, there are many, many other natural ways to get a really wonderful natural high if we are being good to ourselves and if we are very careful about who we actually let into our lives. And of course, it's important not only to eat healthily, but to interact and socialize. And I was thinking about a couple of patients of mine who are single, a couple were divorced and didn't have any family around at all, not even people to call or to text or to email. During the Thanksgiving holiday, and I had suggested to them that they volunteer. And I've always found that engaging with other people and helping other people and just being around other people and socializing and interacting, it can really make all the difference in the world in our lives. So if you are finding that during the holidays and with, you know, Christmas and of course Hanukkah is now with us, if you don't have friends and if you don't have family and if you're, you know, one of these people, like many, many people that I know who are really reluctant to travel, even to see family, you know, because of the fears of yet another virus that hopefully is not going to really be, you know, impacting us here in the United States, volunteering, it's a wonderful, wonderful way to not only to give to others, but I've always found that the nurturing and the nourishment that volunteering and helping others gives to us, it's probably greater than the gifts that we may be trying to give to other people. So we're talking about, of course, doing what is in our best interest, eating well, making sure that we're getting enough sleep. And of course, the benefits of exercise cannot ever be underestimated, including weight training, which reminds me, I did not lift my weights today. So after the show, I'm going to go into my weight room and do what I need to do every single day. Because I think I had mentioned to you a few weeks ago that I'm one of these people who, when there isn't sufficient sun, when the weather starts to change, my mood can sometimes become a little low. And I think a lot of people who know me would be very surprised to hear me say this. So yes, I have a mild case of seasonal affective disorder. And what I do, and I'm very, very routinized about all of this, I have the lamp, special lamps for seasonal affective disorder. And the very, very first thing that I do before having breakfast is that I am sitting under this lamp, 10,000 lux. And of course, you can go to Amazon and you can read up if you happen to be someone like me, who has issues where there isn't sufficient sun. And I do this every single morning for 30 minutes. And I have found really that it doesn't take a lot of time for the mood to shift. And it's not like you look at the lights. They give you very special directions that the lamp needs to be, I believe, 16 to 24 inches away from you. And I actually read the newspaper when I am doing this so that my eyes are focused on the newspaper or on some document that I'm reading and not looking into the lights. But again, this is something that I have found to be very, very helpful for myself. And of course, we all need to make sure and we try as best as we can to have supportive people in our life. And, you know, I mention this every week that Gary Nell talks about the importance of eliminating toxins from our foods, chemical toxins. And when I talk about toxins and toxics, I usually refer to toxins in terms of toxic people. And toxic people will kill us if we permit them in our lives. And this is why it is so important to be mindful, and it's really important to do great assessments to find out who really deserves to be in our space. And toxic people, as we know, can be friends and they can be family. And some people will say to me, well, you know, I really need to spend a little bit of time with my toxic mother or toxic friend or toxic relative. And my retort, of course, is that a little bit of poison is still poison. So I have a zero, yes, a zero toxicity policy in my own life. And I'll tell you, it works out very, very, very well. Although I'll tell you a cute story about toxicity and a former patient of mine. This was a woman who I treated a number of years ago. Actually, I treated her when I lived in Providence, Rhode Island. And she grew up in an incredibly abusive family. Her mother was verbally and physically and also sexually abusive to her and to her siblings. So you can imagine the difficulties that this woman had growing up. So she came into therapy with me, and we were trying as best as we could, of course, to sort through all of this. And her mother lived very, very close by to her geographically, and holiday time would come up. And the big question is, what should I do? I know my mother is toxic, but I'm the daughter, and she's getting older, and she's going to die one day, and I don't want to have feelings of guilt. So this is what we did. We worked out a plan. And this woman actually was a horse trainer as well. So she was very, very cognizant, and she was very savvy about dealing with horses that sometimes were difficult. That's an understatement. So this was the plan that we actually devised. She started off once a month meeting her mother for dinner. And as soon as the mother started in any way to put her down or to just really utter the typical poison that this mother typically would utter, and she would behave in some of the most disgusting ways, just very, very abusive emotionally, and was always putting her daughter down. So this daughter, this patient of mine, she learned that as soon as the mother started, the dinner was over. And that meant that sometimes the dinner was over even before the breadsticks and the water was poured on the table. And what was really interesting is that she was able to set those kinds of boundaries. And just like the horses that she trained, she was able to train her mother to behave. Now, the relationship, could I tell you that this was a warm and fuzzy and loving relationship? You know, absolutely, absolutely not. But it really met my patient's needs for, in quotes, not abandoning her mother. And at the same time, it really gave her a sense of power and empowerment, knowing that she had finally learned to be able to set boundaries for her mother and for all the other toxic people that she had in her life. So if you're somebody who has toxic people in your life and you don't feel that you're able to make an absolute clean break, you know, think about doing what my patient learned to do. So whether or not it's on the phone or the email or a text in person, as soon as you start to experience and feel the disrespect and the abuse, you have to give yourself permission to say goodbye, to walk out to end the call and say something like this. Don't you ever talk to me like this, and this conversation is over. And it's going to make you feel terrific. Once you get in the habit of doing things in your best interest and not allowing anyone, not anyone at all, to cross over certain boundary lines. Other things that we can do to make us happy, and of course, the key word here is doing. It's the action. We can think about things, and we can ponder things, and we can dream about things, but it's about putting positivity into action that really makes the biggest difference in our life. So dancing and listening to music, and Jim and I, we were dancing to Broadway music a couple of evenings ago. It was just wonderful, just absolutely wonderful. Of course, you all know that Stephen Sondheim died, and was the greatest creator of music ever. And it just makes such a difference to be able to listen to music and dance, and of course getting out into nature is something that is wonderful for all of us. Some people enjoy herbal teas and aromatherapy, and as I mentioned before, the gift of giving. I mean, that is a gift that I learned about many, many, many years ago. When I was a little girl growing up in Winnipeg, my father, we would be driving through some of the tougher parts of town in Winnipeg. And this was such an impressionable thing that he would do. And he would stop the car, and he would see some people, just standing up against the buildings. And it was obvious that they were either homeless, or they needed something to eat, or something, to get them to feel warmer. And my father would just get out of the car, and he would give these people a dollar. And it's not like we were a wealthy family by any stretch of the imagination, but in the giving, he got back so much. And I guess just by osmosis, I learned about the importance of giving. And I guess it was just not by chance that I have chose very, very early on to help people. And of course, becoming a psychotherapist and a sex therapist. So again, the importance of being mindful, the importance of figuring out how are we living our lives, and finding ways every day to find balance between work and fun, and giving ourselves permission as well to give ourselves a break from social media and the cell phones and the computers. And I think that there is nothing better than face-to-face interaction. Although I have to confess that virtually my entire practice, other than the patients that I see in East Hampton, happen to be on Zoom. And what I'm hoping, I keep saying this every single week, every single month, I'm really, really hoping that sooner than later, I'm going to be able to start to see people face to face. It does make a difference. And of course, we are all accommodating as best as we possibly can. But that human connection, that human face, I promised everybody that I was going to be talking about some of the articles that I'm writing for Dance Papers in my Ask BD column. But before I get to the latest column, the latest issue, which is, so what about an inside makeover? I want to talk about an article that was in the New York Times today. The heading of the article, a tear-streaked face and a scramble to help in Maine. And there is a picture, again, this is the front page of the New York Times, Monday, November the 29th, 2021, when Ryan Seaford, who is a patrol officer in Kittery, Maine, and he'd really be somebody that I'd love to interview, first encountered a bruised and shaking Tanya Neal, he got her into a shelter. And I know that a lot of people are very, very reluctant to get the police involved. But the fact of the matter is, if we are talking about domestic violence, and you may not know this, but nearly half, this actually happened in Kittery, Maine, that nearly half of all homicides in Maine are linked to domestic violence. So when this officer first encountered this young woman, Tanya Neal, it was great what he did. You know, he just didn't take her to the police station and interview her. But what he did, he engaged all of the elements, which I loved, which I'm hoping that policemen and police women all over are going to be thinking about doing the same thing. And it actually should become policy. He engaged all of the elements of the criminal justice system at his disposal. So a network of prosecutors, very important, police officers and social workers to redirect this woman. A way a team of engineers might change the path of a river. So he gathered, listen to this, enough information, because she was in a very, very abusive relationship. He gathered enough information for the prosecutors to charge her partner. And his name is Nelson Dion, who would not agree to be interviewed by the New York Times writer, with aggravated assault, a felony that carried a maximum prison of 10 years. And from that point, bail conditions would make it another felony for him to have any further contact with this woman. Now, the reality is that, you know, 1 in 3 women are killed every single day by their so-called intimate partner. And we cite the statistics constantly. And what I've been saying for years and years, what better way to spend our resources, to spend our money, is to make sure that relationship education is a course, not just something that happens 1 hour, perhaps if the schools are lucky, if the students are lucky, once a year, that relationship education becomes a regular course in all the grades, beginning at the first grade level. We need to do a much, much, much better job in teaching our youth. And that's really where it begins. That's what we and how we learn about relationships, about healthy relationships, about unhealthy relationships. And in that way, we are going to be so prepared in ways that we have never been and are still not, that we're going to be able to then empower ourselves with knowledge so that we are then going to be in a position to do great evaluations and great assessments when we are meeting people. And in this way, and I believe that preventative relationship education is absolutely the way to go, because the way we function now, and of course, there are some relationship education programs that are offered throughout the country, and some are offered in schools, but the way we typically function in the mental health world, in our society, in the United States, is on a crisis intervention model. So what happens is that there is a crisis, and then everybody gets involved and says, how could this crisis possibly have happened? And this is what we need to do. And for me, when I look at the divorce statistics, and we're looking at divorce statistics, 48% of couples marrying for the first time, their marriages end in divorce. For second marriages, 67% of marriages end in divorce, and 73% of couples who are marrying for the third time, they too end up in a divorce court. And when we're looking at the domestic violence statistics, I mean, can you imagine three women every single day in this country are murdered by their partner? So we can continue to lament all of this, and we can talk about what a terrible, terrible thing it is that people are being killed. But then the real question becomes, what are we as a society, what are we really planning to do about this? Since despite all of the self-help books and movies and courses and therapists and relationship people who are supposedly working, you know, to help people find and maintain and sustain healthy relationships, the fact is that we are failing, and we need to be honest about this. And I am clear that if we are going to be spending all of our time and all of our money on crisis intervention, we will never see a change in the trajectory of what is going on in the world of relationships. And I'm hoping here in New York City with the new mayor, and I'm hoping to be able to make some contacts with people in the domestic violence world under the new Mayor Adams, to see whether or not there is a way. And of course, there are ways. It's a question of whether people really care enough to implement the ways and provide sufficient resources to be able to empower and educate people about healthy relationships. And it's really a question of, what does our society value? If we only value big business, and if we only value the bigger, better, more philosophy of, you know, how many more cars can we buy, or how many more homes can we have around the world, then this very, very sad but real situation is never going to change. And if you are a parent, and if you have children, whether your children are in elementary school or junior high school or high school, this is a subject that you need to talk about with the teachers and with the principals of the school and the guidance counselors, and let them know that you want your child and you want your children to be learning about healthy relationships and also unhealthy relationships, so that they will be prepared for what I believe are really the most important things in our lives. And that is our relationships, my friends. And of course, you know this to be true. So moving along, we've gone from doing what is in your best interest to my going on and on about the importance of preventative relationship education, and not just, you know, talking about the horrors of domestic violence, which of course they are. And now what I wanted to talk with you about was a letter that I received through Dan's Papers. And of course, as I mentioned, I am the new advice columnist for Dan's Papers in the Hamptons. So here is the letter that I received from Rihanna. And Rihanna lives in Southampton and also in New York City. She says, "Dear Beattie, I hate to admit it, but I am hooked on plastic surgery. I am a 29-year-old single Harvard MBA graduate with a great job in New York City. I've already had multiple cosmetic surgeries, including a facelift," she's 29 years old, "a rhinoplasty," that is a nose surgery, "and breast surgery. I'm embarrassed to admit it, but I'm already considering other procedures. I've been to the best cosmetic surgeons in the country, and yet I am never satisfied with the results. I should also mention that I am a sugar baby and have been having financial and sexual arrangements with sugar daddies since I was 20 years old. This helped pay for college since I've been on my own and have been estranged from my family for many, many years. I realize I have a lot of problems. Yes, Brianna, you have a lot of problems. I drink to the point of blacking out, and I'm obsessed with pornography. And after reading a few of your articles and Dan's papers, I decided to write and see if you can help me. Well, the good news about Rihanna writing to me is that she has become a patient of mine. And I just want Rihanna to know, if you're listening, honey, and everybody else to know, that I've changed a lot of the identifying information to protect my patient Rihanna's anonymity and confidentiality. So I write back to Rihanna. Dear Rihanna, it took a great deal of courage to reach out. And clearly you've had a lot of issues, both past and present, that need to be acknowledged and addressed and resolved. And of course, I say this all the time, even though we can't change our history, we can't change anything that happened a second ago. So we certainly cannot change anything from our past. The good news is that you realize that you need help and that cosmetic surgery is not the answer to the problems that you have already identified. And I congratulate you in realizing that it is better to be dealing with your issues at 29 than to spend an entire life on a roller coaster ride, which will inevitably not end well. I must say that I have such a tremendous amount of respect for Rihanna. I mean, first of all, just writing to an advice columnist who she, you know, didn't really know anything about, and then making a decision, you know, to really get serious and you know, come into some therapy. But you know, the fact is that it has become virtually impossible to browse through popular magazines and newspapers without coming across all kinds of beauty enhancers promising to keep us eternally young. I mean, I want to be eternally young. I do. Look at all of the extreme makeover shows that are popping up on television. I mean, cosmetic surgery has become mainstream. And I think in moderation, I think it's fine. However, in Rihanna's case, I mean, she was looking to feel good about herself instead of looking inward. And she's an absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous young woman. So she chose up to this point to try to change herself and change her looks to feel better about herself. And it obviously was not working. I mean, it would work maybe for a day or so or a week. And this is where her insight and her intelligence in realizing that there were some other things that she needed to do, i.e. think about having an inside makeover. Because in 2020, there were approximately 17.5 million surgical and minimally invasive cosmetic procedures performed in the United States. And as it so happens, the United States is the number one country in the world that performs the most cosmetic surgeries and procedures. And Brazil happens to be a distant second. You know, it's interesting. I thought that Brazil would have been number one, but Brazil is a distant second to the United States. And women, and of course, more and more men too, are flocking to doctors in record numbers for Botox and laser surgery and weight loss pills and breast enhancements and breast reductions and rhinoplasties and tummy tucks and facelifts and eyelid surgery, and body lifts and permanent makeup. And the list goes on and on and on. Now, designer clothes and handbags and shoes and jewelry, many of these items costing thousands of dollars, they adorn the covers of magazines. And people yearn to have larger homes and expensive cars and material toys of every single description, believing that external beauty and an extravagant lifestyle is the recipe for true happiness. Ads and television commercials continually, right? They reinforce the idea that if you are a beautiful woman who marries a handsome and wealthy man, that you will live happily ever after in a mansion on the water. And let me tell you that many of my clientele have been some of the most beautiful, wealthiest people, men and women in the United States. And all I can tell you from experience, that the bigger, better, more, and it's nice. It's nice to have a nice house, and it's nice to have a nice car, and it's wonderful to not have to worry about how you are going to feed your children. But those things in themselves do not make us happy. And believing that they do is an absolute myth. But what is true is that being physically attractive and obviously not having to worry about paying your mortgage, it's indisputably, it's a plus in life. But it is not sufficient to make us or to keep us happy. There are other things in life that we are going to need to attend to. Because what I have found is that the real lives and relationships of the rich and the famous, not the lives superficially interviewed on the red carpet or at benefits, are no happier, and you may be surprised to hear this, than the majority of people at large. You know, clearly having a lot of money and being beautiful does indeed open doors. However, once inside, we all still need to confront our inner demons, our inner selves, our relationships, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Because if we do not deal with our depression, our anxiety, our other psychiatric problems, including drug and alcohol issues, our gambling, our pornography addictions, our sexual problems, as well as our frequently dysfunctional and abusive relationships and sexual challenges. Trust me, my friends, our money and extravagant lifestyle will only help ease the pain for a very, very, very short period of time, for a much shorter period of time that you could possibly imagine. So what are the consequences? Okay, what are the real consequences of not stepping up to the plate to deal with one's demons? In my experience, the majority of people, both men and women entering therapy, have had a variety of physical problems as well, not just emotional and psychological and relationship problems, which have included insomnia, high blood pressure, migraines, gastrointestinal issues, high cholesterol, back problems. It's like, oh, my back is so sore. Well, if you've got a lot of weight not just physical weight, but if you have a lot of emotional and psychological weight, it will weigh you down. And well, these brave men and women that I see finally gave themselves permission to step up to the plate and deal with their psychic pain. As soon as they started to do this, and it's not fun, it's not a tea party. Therapy is painful and it's tough, but it's also really, really rewarding if you happen to find yourself with a therapist that really knows what he or she is doing. And as I've said on multiple occasions, all therapists are not the same. All therapies are not the same, and we have to be very careful, not just with our social relationships, but also with our doctors and our therapists, who we let into our lives. So when these brave men and women that I see finally gave themselves permission to step up to the plate and deal with their issues, the majority began to feel much better, not only emotionally, but physically as well. You know, lessons to be learned, as I so often say, because the reality is that keeping a stiff upper lip of repression and diversion, it's a sure recipe for disaster, because if we continually stuff our emotions or divert our emotions, these unexpressed feelings of pain and anger and disappointment and depression and rejection and humiliation, disrespect and abandonment will surely find a place to lodge somewhere in our body. And I would really love to hear what your thoughts and your feelings are about some of the things that I am talking about right now. So what is emotional and mental health? Well, for me, emotional and mental health occurs when we successfully face our pain head on so that it can finally be put to rest. Again, we're never going to forget what did or did not happen to us. And I have found, and maybe some people would disagree, that forgiveness is also not necessary in order to move on. But I have found that it is only then that we are truly able to embrace living a joyful life. And good therapy with a knowledgeable, caring therapist can be a valuable contributor to that better life. And if you want really an update on what is going on with Rihanna, well, it's still kind of hit and miss. I've only been working with her now for a couple of months. And even though this is someone who needs at least weekly therapy sessions, I frequently will receive texts from her saying that she would like to postpone her appointment for yet another week. But I'm really hopeful. I mean, she took the first step, and you know, I'm really hopeful that she is becoming even more serious to begin to have a little bit more consistency in her therapy. And as for the sugar daddy issue, I mean, this is someone who was completely rejected by her own biological father. Well, at the same time, he was extremely seductive. And as we've been talking more and more about her childhood, she can't seem to remember, but has a sense that there may have been some sexual abuse. So her sugar daddies are all, in quotes, daddies of various different kinds. They are men who are in their 50s and 60s and older. And she has been rationalizing and still up to this point that the money that she receives, which is a very, very substantial amount of money, is helping her to maintain her lifestyle here in New York City. And in fact, when I think about it, and we've talked about this, the reality is that with her Harvard MBA, she's got a great job and she could very well do without the sugar daddy money. But you see, this is a process. Therapy is a process and people have to play it out, just like we play out the points in a game. And of course, I always use the analogy of a tennis game because I am a tennis player and former champion. And you can't really fast forward the process. So it would be great if I could say to you that everything is great with Rihanna. In 6 sessions or in 10 sessions, you know, all of her problems have been put to rest. But of course, that is simply not true. You need to really continue to step up to the plate and think about, you know, as I say, always, you know, are the things that I'm doing, is the way that I am living, is it good for me? Or am I, in fact, engaging in behaviors and in relationships that are really destructive and self-sabotaging? And I'm hoping, and I'm very clear about her relationships with these sugar daddies. In fact, there have been a number of very physically abusive relationships that she's had as a result of being with a variety of different men. And but she, you know, Rihanna has ways to go, but she's smart, she's great, and I am very, very hopeful that she is going to continue on a constructive path with me in her therapy. And as I remind her, as she continues from time to time to postpone our visits and not wanting to deal, I suspect, with a lot of the pain and embarrassment also that she feels about the kind of lifestyle that she is currently living. And also she's very, very embarrassed about her family and about her past. So we clearly have we have a lot more work that we need to do. But I would say that the majority of people who I treat have a lot of work to do on themselves. And it does. It takes an enormous amount of courage to realize that, you know, I'm living my life in ways that are either depressing or they're just ways that are not really good for me. And to take that step, to have that realization and to take that step to do something about it. I mean, that's why the people who I treat are really my heroes, because they have gotten to a place in their lives where they realize they can't continue the way they're living. They're really destroying themselves, or they're certainly, you know, engaging in relationships and behaviors that are so incredibly self-destructive that there's really no place else to go other than continuing to sink. And, you know, I encourage you. I mean, this is the thing about crisis intervention. I don't think that I've ever received a call from anyone or from couples where they would say, Beatty, I think I need some help in learning how to communicate better or learning how to do effective problem solving. Invariably, people wait for crises. I guess that's just the human condition, which is why I feel so strongly that the schools, and I've been saying this for years and years, as I was one of the directors of the Montreal School Social Services Program many, many years ago, that mental health and relationship education. It's just something that should be part and parcel of the curriculums in schools so that people, the kids would realize I'm having a bad time. I'm feeling perhaps suicidal. I don't have any friends. I'm having problems with my parents. That they would realize that the most natural thing that they could then do would be to reach out and ask for help so that we don't need to make it such a big to-do. And one of the things that has actually happened in the last couple of years, and we see this everywhere, that mental health is now becoming more and more and more mainstream. We're seeing this in the commercials. I remember Michael Phelps a couple of years ago, and I forget the company that he's the spokesperson for, but, you know, he talked about his own mental health issues and how it was so important for him to be able to reach out and ask for help. And we're seeing a lot of this, and this is all good. So it's not just something that the movie stars and celebrities are embracing, but I'm hearing from more and more people, regular people, that they're seeing or they're thinking about seeing a counselor, or they're thinking about talking to someone. And if you are in this kind of a situation where your life is just not going in the direction that you hoped, you may not be clinically depressed or you may not be suicidal, but that you want to get a second opinion. And when you think about it, we get second opinions on almost everything. A second opinion on what kind of a phone to buy or what kind of a computer should we buy. And this is if you looked at seeking out mental health treatment in this way, I think it would really be, you know, a lot easier for you, that you're looking to talk to somebody to get a second opinion on how to best improve the quality of your life and the quality of your relationships. Well, I'm looking at the clock, and an hour has virtually come and gone. The time goes by so quickly. And again, I want to thank you so much for listening and for emails that you send me. And I want to leave you with my two weekly messages. The first message, and of course, this is all apropos what I've talked about this entire hour, is to do everything that you can possibly do, including getting help, and to make sure that you're doing things that are in your best interest. And that is the way of demonstrating yourself to yourself that you really love yourself. And secondly, we all need to do a much, much, much better job. And that means just not talking about it, but putting it into action. Into loving our fellow man and reaching out and being sensitive and empathic when it comes to the other. So again, I want to thank you all over all these years for hanging in with me. And I'm hoping, and of course, every single week, I hope that there is some little thing that I say or have said that will make a real difference in your life. So again, happy holidays, everybody. Have a good rest of the day. And I will talk with you next week and every Monday afternoon, live Eastern Standard Time from 3 to 4 p.m. right here on the Progressive Radio Network. So goodbye, everybody. Talk to you next week.